Hello, everybody. Welcome to Random Trek Review. It's the podcast where we analyze, discuss, and review randomly selected Star Trek episodes. My name is Andrew, of course, and I will be your host this week. I'm joined by my good buddy Matt. And Matt, you know, I've only really got one question for you this week. Do you want to die?
Well, no, of course not. And that's why I make sure that I provide all the cells in my body with mild entertainment every day.
That's right. Only 4 hours a day to keep them nicely stimulated and entertained. Because, of course, we're looking at In the Cards. It's Deep Space Nine. We're back. What do you think of that?
Nothing wrong with another Deep Space Nine, although this is, what, four in a row now?
Four in a row, and I actually think that the last one before this, you even said, man, we're due for some Deep Space Nine. And, I mean, yeah, we're due all right. This is fourth strong, but, you know, I think that it's one of our favorites in terms of the series. So, I mean, I'm not really necessarily opposed to that either.
No, and it gives Deep Space Nine a chance to catch up to all the other series because we didn't have a lot of them in the first season of RTR.
All right, Matt. So, of course, this is my episode this week, and I guess we should kind of go through the goods, the bads, the things that I missed out, the things that I mixed up, and give me a score out of 5 cellular regeneration and entertainment chambers.
Okay, you had a pretty good handle on this one. You talked about Jake wanting this baseball card for his dad because, you know, Captain Sisko was very down because of everything that was happening with the Dominion War. You knew that it was held at an auction at Quark's. You mentioned that Morn buys a painting. You also mentioned that Jake and Nog have to do all these crazy trades to get it, and there's this crazy scientist that has this really zany, weird plan that doesn't really work out the way that they wanted it to. The one thing you didn't mention was anything about the side plot with the Bajorans and their negotiations with the Dominion, but otherwise I think you pretty much nailed it, so I'm going to give you a score of 4 cellular regeneration and entertainment chambers out of 5.
All right. Well, that is good news because, of course, Matt is on a little hot streak here. He has back-to-back-to-back perfect scores, so that's going to get me at least a little step closer to catching up with him. Let's take a look at this one in particular. This is In the Cards. It's Season 5, and it's the penultimate episode of Season 5, episode number 25, and it aired back on June the 9th, 1997. Guest stars Jeffrey Combe as Wei Yun, Aaron Eisenberg as Nog, Brian Markinson, who we've seen before, mind you, as Dr. Geiger, Chase Masterton as Leda, and Louis Fletcher as Kai Winn. This one was written by Truly Barr Clark and Scott Neal, and it was directed by Michael Dorn in his first director appearance. So we'll have to talk about that a little bit later. If you didn't happen to see this one, then you might need to go and check it out right now. But if you'd rather just listen to my synopsis, then let me get you up to speed. Morale is at an all-time low on Deep Space Nine as the looming Dominion War weighs heavy on the inhabitants of the station. Captain Sisko particularly seems down, and his son Jake decides to cheer him up by purchasing a 1951 Willie Mays rookie card from an auction the Quark happens to be organizing at his bar. Jake borrows / guilts Nog into loaning him some Latinum to purchase the card, assuming that 2 bars of gold-pressed Latinum will be more than enough. Unfortunately, there's a mysterious Dr. Geiger who outbids the youngsters with an outlandish 10 bars of gold-pressed Latinum. This breaks young Jake's heart, as this was the sure thing that was going to lift his dad's spirits. Nog suggests using his Ferengi negotiation skills to barter for the card. Turns out that Dr. Geiger is a very peculiar scientist that is working on experiments to excite the cells in one's body and to eventually cheat death. He needs some very rare and hard-to-get equipment, but makes a deal to trade the card for the stuff if Jake and Nog can use their pull to get it. This leads to the pair running errands for the senior staff to get the supplies, writing Kira's speech, categorizing containers for O'Brien, etc. All is going perfectly fine until a visiting Wei Yun assumes that something has run afoul, as his room is directly above Dr. Geiger and Geiger's experiments. This leads to a climax where we actually see a misunderstanding sorted out through discussion and explanation. Jake ends up getting the card, which cheers up his dad, and the rest of the senior staff end up feeling better as the benefactors of the good deeds done by him and Nog. All right, Matt, I think that it's kind of hard. We have given away a little bit the fact that we kind of like this one. We're big baseball fans, so obviously anytime you have a baseball-centric episode, it's going to always err on the side of kind of positivity for us. But give me your quick impression of the episode, and if you remember seeing it or if you have fond memories perhaps, then let me know what those are.
I like this episode. It's a nice little kind of comedy episode to kind of ease a bit of the tension in the middle of a pretty intense stretch of Deep Space Nine as the Dominion War was brewing. It's a pretty good as like a funny episode. There's a lot of funny parts to it, and just the premise in general is, you know, pretty ripe for some comedic elements and such. First time I saw it, I'm guessing, was during the original run. I was watching Deep Space Nine every week. Didn't miss an episode back in those days, and so this one does kind of stick out because it is pretty funny, and I mean, there's a baseball card at the center of it, so being a big fan of baseball, it's going to definitely stick out to me.
Yeah, I think I would kind of mirror the same thing. I think that I remember this one just because, again, that baseball through line. I think that this is one of the better, maybe one of the best, comedy Star Trek episodes. If you actually sit and think about it, it is one that works really well without going completely haywire or completely off the rails, kind of just as a week of, you know, just forget what we've been up to and we'll just do a silly thing. I think that this one kind of works really well for that, and we'll talk about that. And yeah, I think that, I don't know, it's very weird even in the episodes that we've been watching, because we got Emissary, we had Imaginary Friend, we had Broken Link, we've had like a lot of kind of serious ones, and this is almost breaking up the seriousness of our show along with where it broke up in the when Deep Space Nine was airing. So a very welcomed episode, let's say.
Yeah, it's definitely a nice break from all this heavy and intense philosophical sort of discussions that we've been having. We can just goof around.
Right, exactly. So let's talk a little bit of the development of this one, because there is kind of some interesting pieces here. The first thing is that this was intended to be a bottle show, which I guess it is. It's mostly just walking and talking, and it's mostly on the station, if not the entire thing. So it fits that, and it was supposed to kind of be a respite or a little bit of a breath before the very expensive and the very explosive Call to Arms, which is actually the finale the next week. Do you think that this is kind of like art imitating life, life imitating art, whatever that old saying is? Like, do you think that this kind of perfectly, you know, fits that bill?
Oh, it's definitely well timed, because, you know, the very next episode is when everything goes crazy. And so having this nice little bit of lighter episode right before that was pretty good, I think.
And I think it fits with the fans, it fits with the characters, it fits with the producers, it fits with everybody. Like, how many times do you really see all the stars align for, I mean, excuse the pun, but it is kind of true, right? Like, this is just literally the perfect episode at the perfect time.
Yeah, it's true. It's everyone would have been happy, because, you know, you get a nice cheap episode to make before a big, crazy, expensive finale. So yeah, the producers will be happy. I'm sure the actors were happy to get a bit of a break from all the seriousness. And
it's just fun.
It works out for everybody.
So originally it was supposed to be a bit more serious, actually. Originally Dr. Geiger was kind of trying to bring his wife back from the dead rather than him trying to avoid death. And they tried it, and they kind of went back and forth between the scripts, and eventually they just decided that it was too serious of a thing to fit in this episode. So, I mean, I think everybody agrees that it was the right decision, but what do you think of that idea as somebody who's trying to bring his wife back from the dead?
It's about as zany as what he was trying to do in the episode.
But with a hint of kind of sadness, though, really? Like, because it wouldn't be just a goofy scientist doing something goofy. It would be kind of like, oh, this is actually really... Like, you start to draw in, like, oh, this guy may have, like, mental health problems. His wife died. And he just can't accept it. You know, that kind of thing would be brought up, right?
Yeah, it would be a little bit more heavy and probably wouldn't work as well. But, I mean, it might be another interesting idea for a different episode. But in this case, yeah. If you're trying to go for, like, a comedic type of episode, it would be a bit much, I think.
And I think that's exactly what they kind of came to, was just that this isn't going to work with this serious piece. Let's just take it out. And it's a little bit Mr. Freeze-ish, right? Because that's his whole thing, right? He's trying to bring back his dead wife. But be that as it may, it's also interesting because it's a flip of the A-B storyline, really. If you think about it, the main storyline is kind of the comedic, silly, goofy story. But then the B plot is actually a pretty serious piece of what ends up being part of the Bajor's part in the war. So talk to me a little bit about that, because I think that that's something that you wouldn't necessarily think. It's actually the only part that I didn't remember. I just thought this was a straight, funny, goofy, like, for fun. But there actually kind of is this big thing about this is where the non-aggression pack is.
Yeah, I actually found that very interesting that they were, even in this really zany, funny, goofy episode, they were actually still able to put in some, like, pretty serious and pretty important parts of this whole Dominion War story that they were building towards. And I totally forgot about that too. Like, I seem to remember that Wei-Yun was on the station, but I couldn't remember why until I watched it. And I mean, this is actually a pretty important part.
Ends up being really important.
Yeah, but it's kind of cool that they were still able to kind of weave that into this really weird, goofy, zany episode, that they were still able to have part of the Dominion War still going on. I thought it was actually kind of interesting that they were able to do that.
Yeah, no, it's brilliantly done. And I mean, this is kind of one of those things as well, where if you didn't see this one, it's not like it would be a huge thing to catch up later. It's kind of more for the people that are watching weekly to kind of have something setting up for next week, right? The big finale.
Exactly, yeah. And I thought it was pretty well done.
And lastly, I mean, it's kind of a throwaway thing, but it's funny, is that Jake quotes Picard from First Contact.
It's true, he does.
He says that we work to better ourselves and the rest of humanity, which I thought was kind of a nice little, I don't know, like a nice little thing that they threw in.
It was kind of cool to see that. I don't know if I would have caught that if I hadn't known prior that it was actually the same line.
Yeah, I guess so. And that's from when Picard is kind of explaining to Lily, right? Like, what, yeah. No money and things like that. Yeah, which I guess it was a line that was kind of thrown in by, like, Ronald D. Moore. And he did the screenplay for First Contact, so
right. He
was kind of ripping off himself. In a way, because it was actually him that wrote the original line, reused it again. But I do like it. I think that it's kind of a nice little tie. And I mean, it definitely screams of, you know, when Trek was at its absolute biggest, that's for sure.
It goes back to that funny line where Lily's like, how much does this ship cost?
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's chew on some plot, Matt, and dig into In the Cards. This one starts kind of at the beginning-ish part of the Dominion arc. I think that this is, I mean, it's the episode before kind of war breaks out. And they do a pretty good job of setting this up. The morale is low, war is looming, everybody's kind of down. What did you think of this scene? I kind of like the fact that Sisko makes dinner for his staff and kind of puts on these parties, because you haven't really seen that in any of the other series.
I wrote down... very awkward dinner party. It was kind of tough to watch it, because you know that this is a crew that by this point, you know, gets along with each other and enjoys working with each other, and they're just like sitting around and no one's saying anything. Everyone's just kind of like, Worf is like literally standing in the corner, like staring at the wall, because he just doesn't want anything to do with this awkward silence that's going on in this room. And it was tough to watch, because like you know that these guys enjoy each other's company, and they're just like, they can't even have a conversation without talking about oh, so USS so-and-so is gone missing. Oh, that's the third ship in 3 weeks. And
right, it's starting to become real. And I guess, like, those ships going missing, that is... they don't really seem to know why that's happening. Like, it's kind of mysterious, but I think it's, like, pretty obvious at this point that it's the Dominion, especially since they're, like, at the border where it's happening.
Or maybe they're just flying into the Bermuda Triangle maybe. Of outer space.
Yeah, but regardless, even if it is that, it's still kind of disconcerting. Interestingly enough, it's kind of like Jake and Nog are purposely not that dour. They're not really that down. It's almost like because they're not privy to some of the information, maybe that they're...
they just don't know any better.
They just don't know any better, yeah.
Maybe.
Because there's kind of that funny scene where they go to the bar afterwards and Nog's like, geez, invite me to this party, and it's like the most dour thing ever, you know? Because I think maybe it's just like not really real to them or something, right?
Or maybe they're just too young to really understand the gravity of the situation. So, you know, it does kind of work that they're sort of, they don't really quite understand what is going on and why everyone is, you know, so depressed and unlike themselves.
True. And we've seen these dinner parties before, right? And they've usually been pretty exciting, jovial. So it's definitely different from what we're used to.
Yeah, for sure. It was definitely a different kind of mood and atmosphere at the Sisko's.
Well, we do also find out about this auction. And I guess this is kind of not the centerpiece of the episode, but it's definitely the jump-off point. So Quark is having this auction. And I mean, it literally is, Storage Wars in Space.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch that show?
Oh, I watched far more of that show than I probably should have. Yeah, I wrote down that the baseball card was in with a bunch of junk.
Pretty much, yeah. I actually looked it up. So Storage Wars actually came out in 2010, which seems like really, like, not, like, I wouldn't have guessed that at all. But, yeah, who knows? Maybe they were inspired by this episode.
It's possible.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's lots of good stuff here. Is there anything in particular that you want to talk about, or you just want to get right to what Jake is interested in?
We can just jump right into the baseball card.
Okay, well, let's do it. It is a 1938 Willie Mays rookie card. My question is would this thing have value, and couldn't you just replicate one?
Well, I'm sure Keith Asfagio would be interested in it, that guy in The Next Generation that collected all those rare objects, including Mr. Data. I feel like even in the 24th century, there might be someone who might be interested in it.
Right, but how would you be able to tell a replicated one from an unreplicated one? Would there be a significant difference, or would it basically be the same?
Well, that's an interesting question. I feel like in the 24th century, they would probably be able to replicate it and duplicate it pretty well. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I guess you just sort of have to take the auctioneer at his word that it's a legitimate...
I feel like it has to come with like an authenticity, like... certificate that says that, you know, this is number one of 53 that there is. Or do you think that little case that it was in kind of, you know, protects it from...
Well, I was going to say, if it comes in like a glowing case...
Right.
It's got to be legit.
Oh, jeez, I'm not going to any flea markets with you. Look, it's in a case.
No.
It must be
glowing.
A glowing case, right.
Like a backlit glowing case.
Right. So, I mean, let's just assume for the sake of argument that if you did replicate it, it would be noticeably different. Like, you'd have to put, like, one of those, like, diamond, like, eye pieces. You could, like, look at it, and you could see that, you know, it is, in fact, you know, authentic. So, they figure that this thing is going to go for 2 bars of gold-pressed latinum. But then we kind of get back into this whole humans have no money. That is good because, I mean, that's what we've seen on Next Generation, what we've seen in Star Trek, the original series, but that's kind of not what we've seen on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine kind of introduced this sort of weird market that kind of goes counter to what we saw through the previous series.
Yeah, because they have, like, Federation credits, right?
Yeah, it was, I think, well, I'm sure they put that in just to... introduce more potential conflict.
True, but then again, you run into the problem. If that's the case, wouldn't you just start replicating stuff and selling it?
Why not?
Which is what Quark is doing. Right? Yeah, pretty much. That's kind of the downside to that, right?
One interesting point is where Nog kept all his labdum.
Oh, yeah. You don't actually keep it under your bed, do you, Nog?
That's like the old, it's the old, like, you know, cliche of, like, keeping your money under the mattress.
Right, for a rainy day.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know what? That actually leads us to Matt's trivia question for this week. And I actually have a really tough one for you this week.
Again?
Yeah, but you know what? I actually think that you will probably be able to get pieces of it. It's kind of out of one, two, three, four, like five, I guess. Okay? Can you name all of the denominations of gold-pressed latinum? And, to go a step further, do you know what their exchange value is?
Okay, so there's slips, strips, bars, and bricks.
That is correct.
Now, I have no idea. I know in the auction it went from, like, what, 25, and then it jumped up to the next one.
So, interestingly enough, that is a mistake in the episode.
Oh, no.
So, you would you'd be interested to know that there are 100 slips in a strip. There's 20 strips in a bar. And then the brick has never, they've never announced how much the brick is actually worth. It's never been mentioned
We only saw bricks once.
Right.
Apparently Morn is loaded.
Exactly.
With bricks.
But interestingly enough, there was another episode where there was a big bar of gold-pressed latinum, and that was worth 100,000 Federation credits. Okay, but you know what? You got all the pieces. You didn't get the denominations, so 4 out of 5. Yeah, excellent. It's kind of interesting because I feel like Deep Space Nine set up so many things. I'm surprised that their currency system wasn't more well flushed out and that it wasn't more simplistic, you know? Well, 10 slips in a strip, 10 strips in a bar, 10 bars in a brick, right? Like, that seems like it would make the most sense. But then again, it is in the U.S., and the U.S. is infamous for having, you know, strange currency and measurement conversions.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Ferengi must be, like, using the imperial system, too, because it also makes no sense.
Exactly. So we do get to the auction scene. Tell me about not just this auction scene, but do you have any favorite movie auction scenes or any famous auction, you know, TV episodes where you've done stuff like this?
Auction scenes from other movies. I always liked that one from James Bond. I forget which one it was. Was that the one where they were, like, auctioning off those Fabergé eggs?
Yeah.
And Roger Moore, like, picks one up and somehow he, like, switched them.
Yeah, he, like, lowers it below the table and he swaps it out for the phony.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty clever auction scene.
Yeah.
That's the only one that I can really think of off the top of my head.
I feel like they've done a lot of episodes of, like, The Office where they have, like, they auction off, like, a date. You know, like, I remember Zach Morris doing that back in Saved by the Bell.
Or Kramer and Seinfeld.
Kramer got auctioned off.
The day after he got a haircut.
So, I mean, the auction scene is a classic piece of, you know, Americana, or a classic piece of...
Yeah.
So where does this one kind of rank for you, or how did you think that this one went?
Well, I thought it was kind of decent. I mean, when the lot comes up that they're interested in, there's, like, that one guy, and Nog's like, oh, he'll bow out after two bars,
right.
And it looks like everything's going great, and then the mysterious weirdo in the back starts throwing out these outlandish bids, and, you know, completely messes up their plan. So
yeah,
I thought it was kind of by the book.
Was there something that he wanted in the lot that he had to get?
It was never really explained, actually.
Yeah, like, I figured there would be something in that box that he needed for his machine, but they didn't explain it.
Yeah, it was never mentioned. I mean, maybe there was some deleted scene or something where he's like, oh, I needed this, Andorian coupler to connect the power to my machine.
And I guess this is kind of not the point. This is, like you said, it's very by the book, right? They think they're going to win. They keep going up. Quark is doing the, hey, there are 3 slips there, 2 slips there, now here we go. Like that classic auctioneer joke, right?
And the previous winner was like a bullion, and he's like, sold to the blue man with the nice shoes.
Yeah, exactly. But I do like it, and I feel like, We've seen Quark do auctions before, have we not? I feel like there maybe was one other time where he did a big auction.
Yeah,
he takes like a favorable cut or something.
Yeah, the episode, the Q episode.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, and of course, this is for, like, the Bajoran war children or something.
Bajoran
like,
war orphans,
yeah. That's where the money goes. And he's taking, like, a sizable portion for just doing the auctioneering.
Oh, it's Quark. Of course he's taking a sizable, a generous
cut of the of the proceeds, right?
This is Quark we're talking about.
We find out that the person who has 10 bars of gold pressed latinum is this guy, Dr. Geiger. And so they track him down. They're going to kind of negotiate, or they're going to try to barter for the card. Talk to me about Dr. Geiger.
He was a bit of a nut.
Even by their own admission, which I liked.
Yeah. Yeah, he was he had this crazy plan to attain immortality, and it was a little bit zany and didn't really make a lot of sense, but he apparently had done a lot of work and a lot of scientific research into how to cheat death.
Is he the first true nutter that we've seen? Like, a villain that has really just a crazy idea for a plot or a crazy... Like, he's not even really a villain, because it's not like he did anything wrong or bad. He's just working on something, and the tension all kind of comes from whether they're going to be able to get the card or not. Can you think of any other episodes in any other series where you really get somebody who's just really crazy? Like, he's just nutty?
I feel like there are nutty characters out there, but this is definitely one that sticks out. Because it's just completely absurd. His theory on, you know, cheating death.
Right. And the characters in the show think it as well.
Exactly, yeah. Like Sisko or Jake and Nog are just, like, looking at each other like, what is going on with this guy?
Right, yeah.
And even, like, you know, and even, I think even Wayoon at first, when they're, like, listening in the floor, like, what's going on down there? It was...
Right, because they pick up, like, some sort of waves or something, right?
I think it was just Wayoon's, like, super sensitive hearing could hear all the noise.
Right, okay. So then he just figured that it was something nefarious.
Yeah, probably. He probably thought they were, like, someone was trying to spy on him or something.
Right, or trying to, like, set up a big bomb or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is a character that... I don't want to say everybody has kind of, like, come into contact with people like this in their everyday life, but you definitely have met people or run into people that are just kind of a bit different. They're just a bit off, and they have kind of crazy thoughts about something, which, I don't know, I kind of like that they still exist in this period of time.
Just walk around downtown. You might run into some zany people like this.
Yeah, true.
If you walk around long enough.
Do you want to die? I really hope nobody walks up to me downtown and,
ask you that question.
Ask me that question. Yeah, I'll be running the other way.
Hey, this is Matt, and you are listening to Random Trek Review. To get the latest podcasts and to read the RTR blog, visit our website at randomtrekreview.blogspot.com. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching for Random Trek Review. You can find us on social media, Twitter at Rando Trek Review, and on Instagram at Random Trek Review. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions and prefer old school email, feel free to drop us a line at randomtrekreview@gmail.com. Now back to the show.
All right, you might need to kind of dig deep here, but I would almost make the argument that this may be Jake's best episode, and then maybe as a sub-question, is it the best use of Jake in terms of what we typically see from him, which is not, I mean, in my opinion, anyway, not the greatest.
The best Jake episode would be debatable. I mean, The Visitor is pretty good.
True, but that's not really like Serac Lofton as much as... yeah, good point. The Visitor's probably his best, but maybe...
It's debatable, but this is like pretty good.
Right.
I mean, giving him and Nog this like little sort of side mission to attain these objects is like actually pretty believable for him. And the fact that he's doing it to try and cheer up his dad is also very, very believable. So I think it's a great Jake episode.
And I feel like his kind of way that he delivers lines really kind of works in this one. Because, I mean, we've made fun of it a bunch of times, So when he asks, do you want to die? Jake has, like, the most deadpan, like, not really. And it's just hilarious. Like, I don't know why it works so well, but, like, he very, like, earnestly is like, no, not really.
Well, yeah, and he didn't even, like, think about it either. Like, he didn't even think, like, is he trying to trick me? Is this kind of a, like, is he going to... Like, stab me in the heart after I answer this question. He's like, no,
he just takes it as a he just takes it as a at face value, which I really like. I think that it makes for such a great story that we haven't typically seen, dealing with this person that is so bizarre, so crazy, right? Now, I mean, kind of the other interesting thing is that the plot point of not wanting to die, is this silly, like way too silly, or is it the perfect tone for the episode?
Oh, I think it's a really good tone for this episode, just because it's a crazy idea. Like, I don't think it really is any different that it's trying to cheat death. It's just zany, and that's what you kind of need in an episode like this. Like, there are any number of other things you could probably do that would still work, that wouldn't necessarily involve cheating death.
True, and I feel like we've seen this in other sitcoms and other movies and stuff, right?
Probably.
Like, the idea of not... wanting to die. Like, I kind of think, remember Emperor Palpatine in Revenge of the Sith? He has, like, that whole thing where he's like, he even figured out a way of cheating death.
Oh, like, yes, that, like, crazy Sith.
Sith, like, dude. Person from the past or what have you.
And then somehow he, like, mysteriously died anyway.
Well, yeah, that's true. Or was he that, was he supposed to be that guy, maybe?
Maybe.
I don't know. Because he was, like, no, I guess he got electrified. That's why he was old and wrinkly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but either way, like, I think that this is kind of something that we've seen before. It's not so crazy, right? And you do hear kind of real-life examples of it as well. Like, I remember reading one time that, you know that guy who makes, like, Apple products, Steve Jobs?
Yeah.
So, like, apparently, you know how, like, you don't have to turn your Apple phone off or your iPod off? Apparently, it was because he had, like, a unnatural fear of death, and so, like, he made his products so they never turned off, they never died. I don't know if that's true or not, but I remember reading that story. It was kind of interesting.
That's rather bizarre, but...
But that's what these kind of, you know, rich celebrity guys are like, right?
I guess.
Anyway, I thought that it was the right tone as well, and I thought that it was a kind of nice blend of something I feel like I've seen a bunch of times, but now that I say it, I really can't come up with, like, a bunch of examples. But the idea that somebody doesn't want to die and they're going to put all their time and effort and resources into kind of prolonging their life is definitely something that is believable, which is good, but then they did it in a silly way, so you're kind of like halfway between real and not real. All right, let's just jump over real quick and talk about Wei Yun and Kai Wynn. It's kind of a weird thing because this whole side plot is very B story. Do you think that this is brilliantly placed in this episode, or do you think that it's kind of too important to stick on the side of this other episode?
Oh, that's a tough one. It's definitely an important part, and it actually comes back in the very next episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Like, I feel like there was enough time spent on it, you know, show how important it was, and I feel like it was. I didn't really feel like it was out of place as sort of the secondary plot of the episode.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. It's maybe one of those things where, and I don't remember because I haven't seen Called Arms recently enough to know the specifics, but if they kind of just mention it in the next one, it makes it like you cover your bases almost.
Yeah, yeah. So they definitely covered their bases. I mean, they sort of introduced this and it wasn't like they sort of shortchanged it or anything.
Right, and it's not like you have to say, oh, remember last week when Jake was looking for that card and we signed the non-aggression pact? Like, it's just kind of, like, they just kind of bring up the fact. And this ends up playing a pretty big, important part, right? Because otherwise, they wouldn't have really been able to do the whole war thing, right?
It would have been trickier, yes.
Because they probably would have just came through and blasted Bajor straight away.
Or just handed it back to Golden Cod.
I guess maybe the other only problem with this is, like, why is the Dominion really wanting to sign this pact with Bajor?
That is one thing that I thought of, and I was, like trying to think, like, strategically, how does it make sense for them to want to have a non-aggression treaty with Bajor? And the only thing I could come up with is, like, they wanted to leave it, like, pristine so that once they won the war, they could just give it to Gul Dukat.
That's not bad. Or do you think that the Dominion is knowledgeable enough that if they destroy Bajor, that the wormhole aliens may punish them? Or are they even aware of those aliens?
Oh, I'm sure they would have known.
Right, yes. So maybe it's just kind of like a safety. They're just going to leave Bajor alone right at the beginning. So I'm not necessarily against that. Even though it is a little bit of a hole, I don't mind it.
Yeah, it does. I guess you can sort of connect the dots.
So I guess let's boomerang back to Jake and Nog, because that's really the true essence of this episode. And we get into this whole idea of like trade economy, and because they don't really have any latinum, they're going to just kind of do the bidding of the senior staff. I thought this stuff was great. What was your thought on them kind of bouncing around to the different people and doing work for them?
I thought some of the chores that they came up with were actually quite clever. Like, for example, the Chief O'Brien part where they're like...
Yeah, pretty standard.
It, that was pretty, you know, that was something that was pretty, I don't want to say predictable, but when it happened, it was like, oh yeah, of course, you know. O'Brien's always like overworked and could always use help. But when they, you know, Jake is like rewriting Kira's, you know, speech, I thought that was really clever.
Especially because, Jake's got, like, the writing background.
Exactly. And then also Nog, like, filtering out the distortions in Worf's Klingon opera because he's got the Ferengi ears.
Right.
I thought those were really clever.
Yeah, those two were good. The one that I had kind of forgotten about, I kind of forgot that Bashir and Leeta dated. And then I was watching this, I was like, oh, yeah, they had, like, that whole romance. Maybe the better question is, why did she keep his bear? And maybe a more exciting question is, have you ever done this? Like, taken an ex's thing and kept it? Or somebody, one of your old sweaters got nerfed by somebody? Like, this seems like a really strange thing to keep after a relationship goes under.
That was very odd. And what was even more odd is that, like, Nog was somehow able to, like, sneak into her quarters and steal it back while she was sleeping.
Yeah, if she had woken up... That would have been very,
He would have kissed his Starfleet career goodbye.
Yeah, he would be like in emissary level trouble. Very bizarre, but I did kind of not mind that whole like Bashir teddy bear thing. I think that it was kind of, it gave him like a little bit of a, like a kind of a soft side that you saw. And that was like the thing that he wanted more than anything. And that's a hilarious scene too, where they're like, don't you want some time in the holidays? He's like, nope. And he's like, oh, what about this? Nope. Well, what do you want, right? He just wants to be left alone. He wants to work on his, like, peptides or whatever it was.
Yeah, Jake, like, tries to use, like, the Nog strategy to figure out what he wants. And he's just, like, staring at the screen just saying, nope, nope, nope. And then he, like, drops, this Kukulaka business. And they're like, what the heck is a Kukulaka?
Yeah, well, that's it, right? But yeah, I mean, this is just fun. I feel like all these little kind of things, all these little kind of looks into the senior staff is fun. And it's a great way, and we've talked about it a million times, but it is a great thing to see the senior staff through the eyes of, I mean, Jake is a main cast member, but just kind of through Jake and Nog, it's kind of interesting to see. And like O'Brien's got the kayaking outfit, which is a running gag. There's a lot of things kind of hitting nicely here, I think.
Oh yeah, definitely.
All right, so I guess up next is, it kind of takes a weird turn because it goes in a direction that I wasn't really expecting it to. When they show up and the doctor is gone, all of his gear is gone, which is a very common thing, right? But then when they go to Odo and they go to Sisko and there's like no record of this guy, nobody knows who he is, nobody's seen him, it's almost leaning in the direction of like a figment of their imagination or something. What were your thoughts on this whole Dr. Geiger being missing?
Considering how he was sort of going the rest of previously in the episode, it wasn't really that surprising that he would kind of disappear without a trace because he seemed very paranoid. And I feel like when I first saw this, I was like, oh, maybe like the people that he was running from, like that he talked about earlier in the episode, like finally caught up to him and got him, or maybe he just ran away. It was kind of odd, but it didn't really seem all that out of place.
The thing about it too, though, is that they go to Sisko's office and then they get beamed to him straight away. So the mystery is solved really quickly as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So, I don't know. Do you think that he needed to be, like, they had no recollection of him or anything? Or maybe they could have just been like, oh, yeah, that guy, like, he left or something.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, then I guess maybe the other question is because they're running around and doing all of these things, now they've kind of created this conspiracy. Because Wynn's on the station, Wayun's on the station. It's very tense. Everybody's on edge. And these guys are running around getting all these crazy compounds and chemicals and stuff that is very suspicious. This was kind of an interesting way to amp up the tension. And it works really well. Because you go from kind of this silly, fun, goofing around to Sisko being legitimately upset with the fact that they accuse Wynn of potentially being part of it and stealing stealing the stuff.
Yep.
So what was your thought on that?
I thought it was kind of funny that they like came up with this whole conspiracy that really didn't make a whole lot of sense. And then not only that, but they like acted on it and did some it made some pretty serious accusations that were completely outlandish.
And, I mean, at a certain point, do you think that they should have just given up the ghost or given up the goat? Like, they should have just said, yeah, you know what, we were trying to get this baseball card, this is what happened. Because I feel like they kind of go maybe a step too far, like one step too far.
Yes, they definitely did.
Like when Sisko calls them on it and they just said, oh, we were drunk at the time. That seemed like, okay, it's over, you know. He's not going to appreciate the card at this point.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely one step too far, and, like, saying that they were drunk.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of getting at least a little bit silly, but then they rein it in really quickly when they get beamed over to Wayun's ship. He's suspicious as well. They actually just explain it, and
he didn't believe them.
He didn't believe them, and that was the thing that got them off.
Well, and then Jake came up with this even more outlandish story about, like, time travelers and such.
Right.
Which Wayun was like, okay, maybe...
the first one was true, yeah. But I just think this is a great scene. And then Dr. Geiger comes out, and he kind of talks about living forever. And then Wayun was like, oh, I'm kind of an expert on that. And they team up. Like, I don't know. It just seems like a lot of things are clicking really well. Like, I think that they have a great understanding of what the characters are, what the characters are about, and yeah, I don't know. Did you feel that same way, or did you kind of think this was just kind of silly and dumb and didn't really conclude in a good way?
I thought Wayun's interest was a little bit silly, but...
In a good way, though?
I think it worked for the episode because the whole thing is just silly. So, of course, it would make perfect sense that at the end, when Geiger tells Wayun all about his like plans for immortality, that Wayun would be like, oh, that sounds very interesting. Maybe we should chat about it.
Right.
So... Yeah. I thought it was fine.
And I mean, I guess the ending, too, is very positive. It's very Star Trek positive. Everybody got a little bit of something off their plate, and they were able to do something for their own benefit, or they reaped some sort of benefit. And so, you know, Jake and Nog inadvertently kind of cheered everybody up in the lead up to something that's going to be really, really bad. So I thought that that was great.
Yeah, there was like that montage of like each person... You know, there's, like, O'Brien walking out of the Holo Suite. There's, right. like, Kira with the, like, crazy applause at her speech.
Right.
Worf is, like, sitting on the Defiant, like, enjoying his perfectly tuned Klingon opera, right? Yeah. And it goes through all of them, you know?
Yeah, yeah, no, it's good.
Lita is, like, tearing her quarters apart.
Oh, yeah, she kind of ends up not being too happy, but...
She was the collateral damage.
True, but it didn't really make sense why she wanted that bear anyway.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
So I don't really feel too bad for Lita.
No, no. Well, she stole it.
Yeah.
She got what she deserved.
Yes, perhaps that is true. All right, let's run down some cast, some characters, some production notes, and my favorite bit, the memorable scenes. So we get a lot of heavy hitters here, but I guess the biggest guest star here is Dr. Geiger. I mean, we've actually seen this guy before. Do you remember that?
Brian Markinson, he was he played a much different character in Homeward.
Yeah, that was the one. Remember, he kind of gets onto the ship out of the holodeck, and then he ends up committing suicide. So a much different role this time around. Definitely much more goofy, much more fun. What are your thoughts on Dr. Geiger?
I thought he was just a zany scientist, and he had some crazy ideas about how to cheat death. But I thought it was kind of a fitting character on this episode and a fitting zany theory to go along with the funny goofiness of the episode.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I think that did he end up showing up on Voyager as well, maybe. But I can't remember exactly where. Just maybe
he was what was the guy's name? He was like one of he was like an engineer who ended up getting his face like grafted onto this Vidian guy.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Okay, I kind of remember that. That's like early, like season one.
If you want to, we talked about it on Homeward. I'm sure you can.
You can find him.
Listen to it.
True. The other big one is Nog, and we've talked about Nog. We love Nog. There's not much to say here other than he kind of is playing the good friend. He's at the start of his Starfleet. This is kind of a little bit before he gets really good, but I think that this is where he is definitely clicking much better than early season Nog. What is your feeling of Nog season 5 era?
Season 5 Nog is, yeah, I think you said it best. He's really just starting to get into when it's really good. He's still kind of that naive cadet, and he's all about following the rules and whatnot.
Yeah, and you know, for a character that really isn't in a ton of episodes, you know, when Aaron Eisenberg passed away just a few weeks ago, it was very kind of hard-hitting in the Star Trek community, or at least I kind of felt like it was. Everywhere that you went, and even in the newspapers and things, there was definitely a love for this character that I don't think you would have got if he had stayed the same kind of goofy, annoying kid from early seasons, right? And we've been lucky here because I feel like a lot of the times the Deep Space Nine episodes we pull, they're Nog episodes or at least ones that he's in because he's actually not in a ton of episodes, like on the grand scheme of things. And we've had quite a few heavy hitters. This one, and we had, Emissary he's in, and we had
Paper Moon
last season. So, yeah, we've had lots of Nog, and this is right before he gets really, really good.
Yeah, he's sort of on the verge of becoming a much greater character than when he started and was nothing more than a petty criminal.
Right. So this is also Kai Winn, right? So this is season 5 Kai Winn. I don't think that anybody can really make the argument that she's not a great character, but what do you think about Kai Winn, like, pre-war?
Kai Winn, in general, makes me cringe.
Yeah, which is the point, right? Like, yes, it's good heel heat, but the one thing that she does that is really kind of hard to argue is that even when you are cringing and you hate her guts, she usually does have rationale and reason behind she's doing the things she's doing.
Well, even if they are purely self-serving, yes, that's true. Although we don't really get that in this episode. There's not really any shenanigans. I mean, she's really just sort of straight up negotiating with the Dominion, but there isn't really any typical Kai Winn nonsense.
No, and she's legitimately concerned that people are leaving the station in the fear of war breaking out. So that part of it, yeah, you have to kind of agree. And the non-aggression pact just makes sense, like, in every facet, right? So
yeah, because the Dominion could probably wipe Bajor off the face of the universe if they really wanted to.
Right, so there's really no reason not to do it. And this is actually one of the rare times where they actually have this kind of support of Starfleet as well, right?
Well, Sisko, he isn't really crazy about it, and he keeps telling her to, like, stall for time, but ultimately, because they can't really guarantee the safety of Bajor, he does end up telling them to sign it.
Right.
But in this episode, he was, you know, he didn't really want them to, but he wanted them, you know, basically wanted them to stall to try and buy time to figure out what to do.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, this is all kind of typical politics stuff, which I like, and is all very good. We also get Wei Yun here. He doesn't do a ton, but he does have some funny lines, and it's always good to see Jeffrey Combs. So, what are your thoughts of Season 5 Wei Yun? This is what, the second Wei Yun? I can't keep track.
There's far too many of them to keep track. I mean, Wei Yun doesn't really change all that much, I don't think, over the course of the series. He's the same kind of,
yeah, that's
you
true.
Know, tries to be charming and nice, and really deep down he strictly has the Dominion's best interests at heart, even though he tries to convince you otherwise, and he is Wei Yun.
Yeah, and I think that he plays such a big part of the war that this is, cause he's kind of like the mouthpiece, really, right?
Yes.
So it's good to have him around, even just if it's just getting you used to him being around, because you're going to see him a whole lot coming up in the next two seasons.
Yes, that's very true.
All right, and I guess that's it for characters. For production notes, did you happen to notice that the computers that Dr. Geiger was using are actually the computers from the Excelsior?
I noticed that they were, like, sort of the old style. I didn't realize they were actually from the Excelsior, but they sort of, like, the movie era, they sort of had those, like, blue and green colored panels mm-hmm. and buttons, and I did notice that, yeah.
Did you like the Excelsior?
It was all right.
I heard it has trans warp drive. I always like the Excelsior. I don't know why. It's kind of like it has that gimmick of being really unreliable. Like the engines only work like every once in a while. Like sometimes you get
when
like
Scotty doesn't sabotage them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I always like the Excelsior. So happy to see the computers being used again. All right, and remember that painting that Morn buys?
How could I forget?
Yeah, so
he walks out. He's like, he's just like carrying it, like no case or bag or anything. He's
yeah, just carries it. But interestingly enough, you know, many episodes later, Quark inherits that painting in the episode "Who Mourns for Morn." It's what he gets left in his will.
Wow, how generous of Morn to leave him a painting.
Well, they never showed how much it cost, though.
12,000 bars.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ultra rare painting.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how much it costs, but you know, who knows? It could be good. Yeah. All right, now we kind of gushed over the fact that this is such a great episode. You know, the two running around stuff, but they actually did it before. Way back in season one, it was an episode called Progress. Is that what it's called?
Yep.
I don't remember it at all.
That's the one with the self-stealing
bolts. So yeah. This is the one where they trade the bolts for the desk and the desk for the... And they basically keep trading up to try to get something of value.
No, the one, Progress, is the... I feel like they just had, like, a very small amount of money. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to, like, earn profits, but it failed miserably because they ended up buying these self-sealing stem bolts that were...
Useless
to, like, 99.9% of people.
Right.
And so they're trying to, like, sell them, but nobody wanted to buy them.
Is this the one where O'Brien sells Sisko's desk?
No, that's the
seventh. That's the seventh season episode where they also used it.
I was really hoping that was this episode, because that scene where O'Brien is standing in Sisko's desk, yeah. He has a desk that looks nothing like Sisko's real desk. And Bashir walks in and he looks at it and he's like, this is not his desk. And he's like, well, we're going to paint it.
Yeah.
Even though it's the wrong shape, it looks nothing like it.
Yeah. So that it was in the episode Treachery, Faith, and the Great River.
Yes, that was season 7.
Season 7, yeah.
That was also really good. Like, that's this episode, basically this episode redone, but
with the whole cast.
With some of the stakes kind of raised as far as, like, what they're trading.
Right. You know what? Actually, when you look at it, I didn't really remember that Progress episode, but almost every time that they used this trading mechanism, it kind of worked. Like, they're all pretty good.
Yeah, they all have a good humorous element.
They all have at least one memorable thing.
That's right.
Right? So, I mean, that says something. Now, Jadzia Dax is not in the episode, which is kind of too bad.
I didn't even notice.
No? They mentioned her at one point, but yeah. Well, I mean, they're doing something for everybody. They didn't do anything for her.
There's too much trading going on. They just couldn't work Dax in there.
Right. And she's already kind of happy-go-lucky, so she doesn't need to be cheered up. You already mentioned it, but Quark had his last auction back in season one, Q-less.
Yes, they were auctioning off a bunch of rare artifacts from the Gamma Quadrant.
True, that was what Vash was doing the auction there.
That's right, yes.
You know what, that was kind of disappointing. I love Q, and I think that when he shows up in Voyager, I liked it, and obviously Next Generation, but that was like really kind of the only one that didn't work was in Deep Space Nine.
To say it didn't work is an understatement.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Him and Sisko, like, having a boxing match is just crazy.
Like an old-timey, it was a bit too much.
Picard never hit me.
All right, and last but not least, that Willie Mays rookie card, I actually looked it up. It's from a company named called Bowman. It's a Bowman Willie Mays rookie card, and it is currently valued around $78,000 or 10 bars of gold pressed platinum.
So I guess we have a rough exchange
rate. Yeah. Well, inflation, though.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
A few hundred years of inflation will, you know, really you know, send that through the roof.
I think you're right.
All
right.
Well, why don't you give me your most memorable scene, your most memorable quote, or maybe it's just most memorable character. I don't know. What's your favorite part of this episode?
Well, I have a line written down, which is from Geiger, and I believe it was when Wei-Yun like abducted him. Mm-hmm. He goes, "I haven't broken any laws, except maybe the laws of nature." So that was the one that was a line that stuck out. As far as scenes, I thought the like initial scene where Jake and Nog like go into his quarters and he has all that like stuff, like equipment and computers and whatnot, like just all around his quarters. That's probably one scene that really sticks out to me just because of how much stuff was in there and how he was all like, you know, step away from the door and all, you know, he's all secretive about what he's doing. So that was one that really stuck out to me, I guess. If there's a scene that I had
that you like,
yeah,
there are so many good ones here. I mean, probably the cheesiest is lions, Geigers, and bears. Oh my.
Yes.
Just because it's just a bit too over the top. A scene that made me laugh out loud was he has to be in it for like 5 hours in order for it to work. And when he gets out the first time, he mentions that I still get bored around the 5 hour mark. which I always thought was really good. Nog asks Jake at one point whether he doesn't know which one of them is crazier. And I don't know, the livery is really funny. And also, we didn't actually mention it, but he actually is also a bit paranoid because he keeps mentioning the soulless minions of the Orthodoxy.
Yes.
Which, do you know, what, is that something that I should know, or?
No.
Oh, okay. This is not like when George joined the, like, you know, Latvian Orthodox. It's like something different.
It's completely meaningless. I mean, when the Dominion captures them, he like calls them soulless minions of Orthodoxy. So I feel like it's sort of a generic term just for like
evil
authoritative people.
Okay, that makes sense. I do like Nog has a line. He says, "If you don't need money, then you don't need mine." That's pretty good. That's good. One's pretty funny. Yeah. And we already talked about, but Quark asks, "You don't really keep it under your bed, do you, Nog?" And then the reaction of that he obviously does. That being said, I think that I really need to go with Do You Want to Die by Dr. Geiger. And you know what? As a runner-up, Jake saying, not really, as the follow-up is just absolutely classic.
Hard to argue.
So give me your final thoughts and a rating out of 5 Willie Mays rookie cards.
I liked this episode quite a bit. It is pretty memorable. I mean, when I pulled it out of the hat last week, I remembered it instantly. It has a lot of really good, funny moments, and it actually did a pretty decent job of like adding an element of the upcoming Dominion War. So it doesn't completely stall with this episode, even though it's sort of meant to be like a self-contained episode. So I liked it a lot. It was really memorable. It was really funny and really zany, and I love zany things. So I am going to give it a score of 4 Willie Mays rookie cards out of 5. I mean, as you mentioned, it's, you know, it's maybe not the funniest of the funny, but it's definitely up there.
I would say that I think that it is maybe the comedy episode that works the best. It's the one that doesn't go too far, it doesn't overstay its welcome, and it really kind of hits on every note. There's a lot of comedy episodes in Star Trek where they go way over the top, or it's a holodeck, or it's a dream, or it's whatever. This is actually one that they just kind of really wrote well, and it makes it work on more levels than just kind of like goofiness. And so, yeah, for me, I would say that this is probably one of the best comedy Star Trek episodes that they ever did, even knowing that Star Trek and comedy is probably the hardest one to pull off, in my opinion. But yeah, I think that this is the best use of Jake and Nog that we've probably seen for Jake. Nog, I don't know. But for Jake especially, this is the best we've seen of him. I think that the baseball thing is a little bit of a boost for me. There's so many good lines. The villain, quote unquote, is hilarious. And yeah, I'm right with you, actually. I'm going to go 4 Willie Mays rookie cards out of 5. Whoop whoop, that is the red alert siren, and of course that means it's time to draw a brand new episode for Matt here. Matt has a little bit of a streak going, unfortunately so for me. He is back to back to back 5-star recalls, so I'm going to dig real deep into the 1951 New York Giants baseball cap, and I am going to pull out... Ooh, my friend, I think that you might be at your end here.
Oh, he's got that look in his face where he's drawn a obscure, unknown episode of some series that
I'm not familiar with. This one, Matt, is going to have a little bit of trouble with, I think. This is from Star Trek Discovery.
Oh, no.
It is from Star Trek Discovery. It is season one, which I know Matt has probably seen one time, and then he's put it to bed.
I've seen it twice.
Oh, okay. It is episode number 14, and it is The War Without, The War Within. The War Without, The War Within. So as Matt primes that up, I am going to just get a timer set here for 1 minute. Of course, if you're playing along at home, you should also try to come up with any plot points, character beats, anything at all that you can come up with, so that you can see if you can beat Matt this week, because I've been having my fair share of troubles, but, you know, you might do better than me. So, let's see. Matt, are you ready?
I think I'm about as ready as I will be.
Okay, well, you have 1 minute. The microphone is yours.
Okay, but I believe this is the last episode of Discovery where they're in the mirror universe. So there's this whole thing where they have to figure out how to blow up that one really big, the Alliance or, Terran Empire ship. And then they also have to figure out how to get Discovery back to their normal universe, and I believe this is one where Lorca dies, or the mirror universe Lorca dies, and Giorgio ends up being like beamed at the last second to the Discovery, and so the Emperor from the mirror universe ends up going back to the Discovery of the normal universe, and I suspect Michael Burnham is probably going to have to do something like superhuman in order to complete their mission. And I'm also going to say that Saru makes a really rousing speech.
Okay. That is it. Yeah. There was, 15 episodes of Discovery Season 1?
I believe so.
So, yeah. This is the second to last one. They tended to go with those kind of weird titles where... The War Without, The War Within, I guess.
Really wordy titles that were totally needless.
Some might say. I feel like we might need to get the hibachi out for Matt next week, because he may put a roasting on Star Trek Discovery. I might have to play the Devil's Advocate next week.
Referee?
Yes, a little bit so. That being said, you know what? We've never had a Discovery episode, so it might be kind of fun to go through it a bit more in-depthly, dissect it a little bit more, and who knows, maybe you'll like it a little bit more, man.
Well, find out.
All right. 2 weeks. Well, meet us in 2 weeks' time when we come back to The War Without, The War Within.